a sardonic hardware store clerk is accidentally transported to 1300 AD, where he must retrieve the Necronomicon and battle an army of the undead so he can return home. Tonight, on Survive the Night Podcast, we're talking Army of Darkness. Okay, we're here, we're back, we're going to talk about the final edition, I guess, in the Evil Dead trilogy. We're here to talk about Army of Darkness. Man, weird revisiting this one. This is, I think, the first time I've seen this thing in a quality higher than VHS.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I've never rewatched it on, like, Blu-ray or anything, so I watched a crisp edition of it. And it makes that thing, like, look even sillier than I remember, even.
Yeah, there's some compositing effects that just don't work.
When in you high def.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say most of them.
Well, specifically when, like, the little ashes are holding open his mouth, that just doesn't work.
It doesn't line up. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a few. Yeah. There's another one where, what's her face? Sheila is, like, standing there in the car, kind of, like, tumbles near her or whatever. And it's just like, oh, that is so poorly done.
Yeah, it's
crazy. But this is, I think, the official one that is full, mainly comedy with a bit of horror mixed in, where Evil Dead 2 was kind of a horror with comedic stuff in it, I would say. This is more, like, silly.
This just isn't a horror movie anymore, straight up. It's just not.
It just has monsters in it. Like, that's what makes it a horror movie. It's like a creature feature.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. And also, subsequently, this is the one that I think most normies get into. I guess for decent reason. So, like, straight up, I watched this with my girlfriend. And I asked her after which of the three is your favorite. And she said this one. I was like, yep, that makes sense. It's the most easily accessible. It's silly. She likes slapstick humor a lot. So, like, that's all this is.
Yeah.
And if you like weird, like, Muppet movements and stuff like that, and, like, skeletons, then this is the movie for you.
Oh, yeah. If you like skeletons, baby, we got skeletons.
If you like skeletons moving around like Kermit the Frog and stuff, then, yeah, we got a movie for you.
You know, I do. I like all that stuff.
Yeah,
I like
it's fine.
As much as I like the other Evil Dead movies, but it's fun.
That's kind of it, yeah. It is nice to have something completely different, though, when you consider Evil Dead 1 and 2 are essentially the same movie in different, like, ways. Almost like different storytellers telling the same base material or something.
Yeah.
It's nice that this is completely different. I guess.
It just also doesn't come anywhere near to the close to the highs of those movies. So
it definitely has more memorable, memeable stuff, though.
There's
parts of this that I just, like, remember immediately, even though it's been decades since I've watched this movie last.
It's extremely quotable in that way.
Yeah. I found it interesting because this I didn't remember. It starts completely differently than how 2 ends, where he kind of shoots the deadite and is revered. He's actually just captured as, like, a piece of shit traitor of Henry the Red's.
Yeah.
So just completely different, which is kind of hilarious.
They also, like, reshoot, like, Evil Dead, original Evil Dead shit again, like, way more, like, way less of it.
Yeah, but to fit in Linda.
Yeah, it's funny they reshoot that stuff again, even though they do have a clip, Like, then that it has, like, one clip of Evil Dead 2 at the end of just him getting sucked into the portal.
Yeah. It's pretty great, and I love that they changed Linda again to Bridget Fonda this time.
Why not?
Sure. It's pretty great. Yeah, I don't know. Not a whole lot right from the beginning of stuff that's too important. It until they get to the well or whatever, the pit, I guess is what they call it in this.
Which version did you watch?
I watched the director's cut. So Technically the original way it was meant to be watched, I guess, that was changed for theaters. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I remembered and I was kind of just waiting for was Blood Fountain, the blood geyser, because that I found it funny back then, and I gotta be honest, I still find it funny. Watching it again, I was just like, it's so ridiculous.
It's like the only blood in this movie, though.
Yeah, this is very much a, like, PG-13 movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
In fact, is it actually rated R, or is it PG-13? I didn't look this up. Because I bet it is PG-13, and I just never even realized it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm going to see if I can find it. I mean, I
think it predates PG-13, I think, still.
Does it? Yeah, it might. Honestly, I don't even know where you'd find that because it's not on IMDb.
So. Yeah, I don't see it on Wikipedia.
Yeah. Well, whatever. Either way, it is definitely not what you would call a hard R in any way, if it is an R. It is extremely silly. It's honestly basically a Muppet movie. It's basically a Muppet movie. Like Muppets Army of Darkness or something.
it has to be an R. That lady gets her shirt pulled off.
Yeah, you're right. And there is, like, I don't know, monster horror elements and stuff. Like, things that wouldn't be great for a child to see, but the 80s and 90s were a different time to be a child, so we've seen some fucked up shit.
Yeah, but PG-13 is, like, late 90s, I think. It gets, like, invented or something.
Is it? Okay.
It's from some Spielberg movie is why it was invented.
Is it Jurassic Park? I bet it's Jurassic Park.
I think so. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was mid-80s.
Yeah, because Jurassic Park was definitely one of those PG-13 movies that I had to get my dad to take me to, and that was in the early 90s.
Apparently it was Red Dawn was the first one.
Oh, weird. Yeah, I guess, like, you guys down there were really nervous about that stuff back then, so that makes sense. You wouldn't want kids to be part of the, like, Red Scare and all that sort of thing. Weird.
Oh, and I guess it, well, okay, it got created after Temple of Doom had come out as a PG, and parents were pissed.
Oh, okay, so it was a reaction saying, like, this needs to be, like, they had to find a middle ground between this is probably okay for younger audiences and not okay.
Yeah, and the movies where people get their hearts ripped out of their chests.
Sure, that's fair. I definitely watched that movie when I was too young, so I get it. Monkey brains, like, there's weird shit. That whole movie just has an aura of hashtag cursed to it, honestly. That whole movie is kind of cursed. I get it. This is definitely a PG-13 type thing where...
Totally.
You should probably be aware of, like, it's not meant for children, but also it's kind of meant for children.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, this is the first one of these movies I saw kind of in that I saw it randomly, just like part of it on TV one time. Like, sure. In the middle of the skeleton battle. And then I was like watching the movie in college. I was like, fucking, I remember this. Oh.
This is definitely one of those movies that I've seen many, many times in my life, but There are huge chunks of it I just don't remember because they're pointless and kind of boring. And sure. Then it gets to the parts that you remember, and those are very standout-ish. So, like, right from the get-go, the beginning is kind of hazy to me. The only reason I kind of remember it is just because of the way Evil Dead 2 ends and just the general setup. Then it gets to the pit part. That whole part I remember because that's one of those memorable parts. Primitive screw heads, this is my boomstick, blah, 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 all that stuff. Then it's kind of like nothing again for a while until I guess the small ashes. I don't know. It's weird because it's like I remember his traveling to the windmill and the mirror, but like none of that stands out as much as like the actual fight with the mini ashes. And then it's just like nothing again, basically, until the main battle. And then it's nothing again until the ending. It's weird. Like, it's super weird how there's just blind spots in this movie for me.
It is funny that Sam Raimi, I guess, has said that he does think the director's cut is a little flabby compared to the, because the theatrical version's shorter. But yeah. Like, it's only 96 minutes. It's not like a long movie.
Yeah, it only cuts out like what, 10 minutes maybe, something like that. Like, not it doesn't cut out a lot.
No, it's really just the ending that's different, and there are a couple one-liners that are different.
Sure, I don't have a list of those.
I know them. I know the big one.
What is the big one?
The big one is when Ash shoots Evil Ash in the face.
Oh, okay.
In the director's cut, he says, "I'm not that good." In the theatrical cut, he said, "Good, bad, I'm the guy with the gun."
Yeah, that's true. That is the one that is missing. That's the one that I was just like, I could have sworn that line was different because I didn't remember that.
Mm-hmm. So when I was, my friends showed me this in college, they showed me the theatrical cut, I realized.
Yeah.
So I have, because I've remembered that line specifically so strongly. Well, and the ending. But yeah,
the theatrical cut is the only one I knew for like ever until my friend bought the like special edition or whatever that came out on like when VHS was dying and DVDs started becoming a thing. Mm-hmm. And like that was, I don't know, like 20 years ago or something.
Sure.
Yeah. But that ending, like, we'll talk about the endings later, but that ending is definitely the thing that you remember.
Yeah.
The differences between the endings are huge.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the things that I never knew before, actually, I still don't even know if it's true. I'm going to quickly look it up because, but the lady who plays Sheila, Aaron recognized her as the lady who, okay. So the lady that plays Sheila in this is her first movie. Later on, she played the main teacher, the good teacher in Matilda, which is like, was a big movie for me and her like growing up or whatever. And I never realized that. And then while we were watching this time around or whatever, she's like, "Holy shit, that's Miss Honey," and I couldn't unsee it, and it like destroyed me. It destroyed my brain. Yeah. She's been in some other stuff too, but I don't remember her in those stuff. Like, she was in 13 Ghosts and apparently The Amazing Spider-Man 2, which I don't remember at all. I don't know. She's been in a lot of shit, but this, it's kind of crazy when you know a person based on like a character that was kind of like there in your memory as a kid, and then you just see them in a completely opposite role as some like weird ghost lady undead thing. Oh,
she's in Europa Report. I've seen that movie.
Okay, sure. I haven't, so I don't have like that line. But okay,
it's a found footage space movie.
Great. It sounds awesome.
It's okay.
Oh, okay. I couldn't tell if it was a bad or a
it was good. Fine.
Oh. All right. I don't know if I believe you. She was apparently imagining to you the show that everybody loves except me. So, anyways.
I don't love
that show. Oh, okay. Well, you and I have that in common.
I guess. There are like some bits that are okay, but yeah. Overall, it's kind of whatever.
I kind of hate that show in a lot of ways. Anyways, that's not what we're talking about here.
There's Fuck one Mad joke Man, in basically. Mad Men I really like, and it's okay. When the guy gets his, they're like fucking around with like a lawnmower in the office, and they run over a guy's foot, so his foot's gone, and then someone else says, "Man, it's a real shame. His career's over. Won't be able to play golf anymore." It's a good joke. It's a quality joke.
Okay. Best thing that has ever been written in Mad Men. So,
yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I believe.
Yeah.
I'm sure somebody's people love that fucking show, and I don't understand it. But that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. So the mini ashes. This is one of the things that I definitely wanted to talk about, because like Blood Fountain and the weird deadite that's in the pit there and all that sort of stuff, that all held up kind of okay in like the corny, weird comedy horror thing this is. Like, it looks terrible, but it always did, so it's fine. Mini Ashes is...
There's a continuity thing where he just doesn't have his gun until he has it.
Until he needs it, yeah.
Like, yep. You see him drop it on the ground, and it's on the ground, and nobody picks it up, and then he just has it later.
So I do. I remembered obviously the boomstick part and primitive screwheads and blah blah blah, but I couldn't remember how he got his gun. So I was looking out for it, and the way he gets his gun is that it magically appears in his hands when he needs it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because the like wizard dude throws him the chainsaw, but he's not throwing the gun.
So in my memory, I thought he threw him both, but no, he totally doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's it's baffling to me how like they just overlook that and nobody cares. But I didn't care until this time, and I've seen this movie a bunch.
But it's funny that that happens, because like the "this is my boomstick" line is like, I feel like the whole punch of why the start of this movie is different than the end of Evil Dead 2 is like to build up to that line.
Yeah, like it's pretty important that he has the boomstick. the godly weapon that they can't comprehend at the end of that movie and not at the beginning of the, it's weird how they do that.
Also him like describing it as like being a specific S-Mart model of this gun he found randomly in a shed in the woods.
Yeah, 12 gauge double barrel Remington.
That is a random shotgun that's been sitting out in this cabin in the woods. Like,
it's not retails for about $109.95.
Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I guess just in general, the way this starts is him kind of giving the lowdown of like who he is, and like now he's trapped or whatever, or now he's a prisoner, and they never really specified any background for him, but this is where we find out he is a retail stock dude that works at a place called S-Mart, and that's where he met his girlfriend Linda.
Uh-huh.
This is just great. Like, sure, all right, let's introduce his origins in the third movie in a quick flashback sequence.
Yeah, that in the director's cut doesn't pay off at all.
At all. No. It's insane. It's so silly. Anyways, I think all that beginning stuff pulls up fine. It's really the small ashes, the mini ashes, and like the ashes out of the smashed mirror in the windmill. This is where it's just like, oh, this is definitely like 30 years old. Holy shit.
Well, I mean, it feels even older than that. It's like so extremely Three Stooges.
That, yes. I mean, this whole movie
in terms of comedy style, but you're right. Like, the effect is also pretty...
It's visually absolutely terrible at this point. Like, not unwatchable, because I mean, we've seen Crime Wave and we've seen It's Murder. So it's definitely watchable.
But whatever, there's like composite effects that are doing the same thing in older movies that look better than this too. It's not all about it just being old. It's also just some of it bad. Just isn't done well.
Yeah, it's just poorly done. And the one that you cited is the one where they're trying to like, there's, he's standing in front of the screen as himself twice trying to hold open the video of him, his mouth or whatever. And it doesn't at all line up or look correct. And it's super awkward and fucking bad looking.
Yeah.
The fight between like them, whatever. I still think it's kind of funny. He throws the fork at that one guy. He gets impaled. The fucking London Bridge is falling down while he's trying to step on them. Then they poke him with a nail and just do the, like, my fair lady ending. Yeah. It's so stupid. Yeah. Everything about
it. He falls on the grill and gets stuck to it. So he has to get the spatula or the scoop to like, scoop his face off.
To pry him off. And then there's no burn mark after.
Like, yeah.
For slapstick lovers, this is definitely the first like really funny. The first really funny thing I thought was when he gets the chainsaw thrown down to him, and then it just like clicks in perfectly on his stump. I fucking love that gag so much.
It's very funny.
It's so funny. This is also funny in a different like, I don't know, more childish, amateurish way where you're just like laughing at how silly it is.
Mm-hmm. This is where like, oh, this movie should have been a PG. Like they, if like this is the core of the movie, like they should have toned down the other stuff so, because kids would be the most ready to accept the suspend disbelief and just enjoy this.
Absolutely. Yeah. This part is important though. Because he swallows one of the mini ashes that grows inside of him, ostensibly.
Oh, yeah.
And starts, like, forcing its way out in a very Resident Evil-esque fashion with the eyeball popping out of his shoulder.
His skin flap with the eyeball, that's, like, the most horror thing in this movie.
Yeah. It starts off as, like, amazing body horror with that and, like, what's happening to him. And then it just turns into a really silly gag with a mannequin head attached to him.
Yes. It, like, very quickly stops being horror.
Immediately, almost. Yeah.
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 Like, it's just that eyeball shot that's horror. After that, it's fucking... He's, like, he's got a mannequin head and he's running around in front of the full moon howling. Like, he's a werewolf.
Yeah, it's insane. It's important, though, because, like, that's where we get the evil Ash copy that turns into the captain, I guess, or the leader of the Army of the Dead.
I'm evil Ash. You're good Ash.
That part's so bad. That part is so bad. There's a few parts. That's one of them that is embarrassing to watch with somebody for the first time. We're just like, oh God, I swear to God, I'm not a child. It's so stupid. Okay. Anyway, this all, like, it sounds like a lot of stuff that's happening, but it's kind of the first like half an hour of the movie. Like it kind of just goes once it starts. A lot of stuff kind of happens because the most important part is Ash gets to the Necronomicon to do the thing, to bring it back to them, and fucks it up. And that's kind of like where the second half of the movie happens. So like the Necronomicon has actually nothing to do with the end of the movie in this one, like it kind of does in the others. It is the inciting action that turns everything bad for the climax, which is kind of interesting. That, like, the thing that was super important in the other ones is just kind of there in this one. Like, not, it's not really that big of an adventure to get there. Just kind of weird shit happened along the way. Great gag, though. The fact that he has to say the three words, Klaatu, Barada, Nikto, and just fucks
honestly,
it up.
My favorite part, though, is when he gets there and he's like, three books?
Yeah.
Nobody said anything about three books. Like, the three books, like, when it plays out, it's kind of a bust. Like, it kind of doesn't matter. But when he's, like, just standing there, like, looking at three books, going like, nobody said anything about three books. That fucking kills me.
This whole part is actually that, like,
and
that's really
and that
good.
Also kills me because, like, I didn't remember that part, whereas, like, I remember Klaatu Vraasa Dicto.
Yeah, sure.
So it was, like, extra funny to be like, oh, right, this bit.
Yeah, this whole bit is amazing, honestly. It's actually fantastic, this whole thing. I also forgot about the three books thing. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess he figures it out too quick for me, maybe. Like, it would have been... I think they could have...
I mean, he just brute forces it. It doesn't really matter.
They could have, like, had another joke in there somewhere, but, I mean, I don't know. I can't think of it now on the top of my head.
The fact that the second book, like, just bites him and then flies away, basically.
Yeah, that was really good. Knowing that book looks so stupid. Yeah, that's true.
But it is like endemic a thing with this movie where like the evil isn't intimidating anymore at all.
No, not at all.
And it's like because like the evil is like way less of a presence. Like so much of it is just like, oh, it's evil Ash. Like, it's just Ash's own, like, perpetuating his own fucking bad situations for himself at this point. Yeah. It's not about, like, an unknowable evil that's, like, scratching at the edges of the world.
Well, it's
like,
funny.
It's closer to, like, a Marvel movie.
It's funny because that it kind of starts that way. On his journey, and the reason he kind of gets thrown into the windmill or whatever is because he's being chased by like the evil in the forest again. Mm-hmm. And but like it doesn't go anywhere. And they never bring it back is the thing.
No.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. Him just forgetting the words or whatever and then coughing and mumbling through it is it's so good. That is
it's quality.
It's so good that it's become a thing that other things have replicated.
Uh-huh.
Like that is just a really good gag. I like that a lot. And then I mean there's the big battle. He fucks it up. The army kind of forms and attacks or whatever. That battle, holy shit. I forgot how stupid those skeletons look and sound. I forgot they talked, like a lot of them.
They're basically like...
They're Muppets.
Battle droids from the Star Wars prequels.
But somehow worse. I don't know. Somehow worse.
Well, they don't say Roger Roger, so clearly they're worse.
Yeah, they're close.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Anytime one of them screams, it's actually hilarious because they just kind of like give it a little shake like a Muppet would. It's great. Uh-huh. That stuff's great. And then it's followed up by like just them exploding into bones and dust or whatever they do. Uh-huh.
But like this is the great evil that Ash has unleashed. Why not speak in the words? Is this fucking comedy troop skeleton army?
Silly skeletons, yeah. Yeah, God, it's so silly. I really love this.
It's like fucking, you know, the Muppets do Helm's Deep.
It totally is, yeah. But like smaller, because this is still an old movie, and it was only like $10 million. So it's not huge, but yeah. The flautists are still my favorite. Just
they're
like
so good.
Playing the bone flute. There's no way to say that. That doesn't sound like a euphemism, but it's literally just a bone, like a femur or something. That's a flute. All of the skeletons are so good in a way that I forgot. And I really love it. This whole part is, you can tell that it would have been so fucking fun to be on set when they were filming this. Yes. Holy shit. the exploding like arrows that they do, and the skeletons just like some of them exploding and some of them just like I really love when some of the skeletons, the way their death animation is that they're like obviously just pushed over or like they just fall or collapse, and it's so lackluster. But yeah, this whole part is so good. And then we get some like weird, Bruce Campbell in a thing for Evil Ash? I can't actually tell, like in a mask or something. Do you know?
I don't know.
Because I don't see why it would be. You don't his face is fucked up enough that you don't have to have him actually do it. I bet it's Ted Raimi. It's always Ted Raimi. Yeah. Oh, wait. Bill Moseley. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. I can actually see it now. Yeah, apparently the Deadite captain or whatever is Bill Moseley, which that makes sense. I really love the fight that he and Ash have and how he just like burns all his skin off and he comes back as a skeleton with eyeballs. It's so goofy in the perfect way. And it's kind of horrific, too. I really don't like eyeballs on just a skeleton. It's creepy. It bugs me.
It's just so fucking silly. I'm like so beyond, like away from it, thinking anything is creepy in this movie by that point.
Yeah. I love how they turned the Oldsmobile into like a murder machine that's basically just an inverted lawnmower, essentially.
Yeah. He only kills like 4 skeletons with it, though. It's just all these close-up shots of it over and over again, like driving in a circle.
Yeah.
He like knocks over like 4 stationary skeletons before crashing.
Yeah. Yeah. For like how much time it would have taken to prepare that thing, it's pretty unremarkable. I kind of like that. I don't know. In this world, he's smart because he's like from an age where they taught science in school or whatever. So he says something like, we're going to beat them using science or whatever.
Yeah, he's got a chemistry 101 textbook. We're going to invent gunpowder and build a robot hand.
Yeah, I love that there's just like the chemical for explosive or whatever in this high school chem book or whatever that was in the backseat of his car. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, also, like, they just build him a robot hand.
Like, right at the beginning.
Yeah.
Too. That whole scene is one of those. It's the groovy scene again, but, like, better.
Yeah, not as. Yeah.
I like it better. Okay. I just like because they add in the mechanical sounds that don't make any sense, where it's like, it's not powered or anything. It's just like him moving, I don't know, like little levers and stuff using his stump or whatever. I don't know. It
doesn't really make sense.
It doesn't make any sense at all. He's like brilliant in this for some reason. Uh-huh. But also, this is where we get the Ash that I think everybody remembers as Ash the most. Give me some sugar, baby, or whatever. Like, that whole scene is really weird where Sheila throws the rock at him at the very beginning. And then, like, after he saves him from the Deadite that gets out of the pit or whatever and kind of lets Henry the Red go, they're kind of like feeding him grapes and stuff. And he's just like, first you want to kill me. Now you want to kiss me. It's like, this writing is terrible. This is such bad writing.
You found me beautiful once, honey. You got real ugly.
That line is great. Stupid. Yeah. I'm really bummed that I didn't have the good, bad. I'm the man with a gun or whatever.
Yeah, that line's so good.
That's one of the like main lines. I really like the primitive screwheads line. I just find that one pretty funny. And also Boomstick. Like, that line is just iconic for a reason. That's just a good part in general. Anyways, they beat the Deadites. Like, I don't know. What do you want me to tell you? If you want to watch it, you should. You should just watch the movie and, like, see that battle, because it's ridiculous. They beat the Deadites and reunite Richard and Henry's armies into one, because they're common enemy sort of thing. That's kind of just like a subplot that doesn't matter that exists in this.
Yeah,
it's just there to set up like why he would have been captured. It's like, well, maybe he was captured because he wasn't trusted because he was part of this other group, or like, it's just so haphazardly thrown together for no reason, and the payoff, there's no payoff or anything, but whatever.
I mean, it just feels like it's just D&D lore or whatever. Like, this is just the situation that exists in this time period, so we're going to have to deal with it. Whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter for our story we're telling, but it exists.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, I don't know. I guess it's a happy little accident that they could use it as a device to have the other army come in and like, save the day when things are getting a little bit dire with Richard, King Richard or whatever his army.
And the Helm's Deep.
The Helm's Deep moment, honestly. Yeah. So sure, it works. Yeah. But the most important part of all of this is we get to the ending. Now, Ash is about to go back to his own time. The Necronomicon says they can do that by mixing up an elixir and him like taking it to basically sleep through time to waking up in, I don't know, his future, whatever. I guess like 6 decades or was it 6 decades? I can't remember when this was set. Is it 5 decades? It's something like that. Yes,
because it's 1,000 years for every drop, and he's supposed to take 5 drops.
Okay, right. Okay. This is where the big deviance is. So the one that I think most people saw, including, it sounds like you and I, when we first watched this, was he gets the potion, and then we just kind of see him in the S-Mart talking to somebody about how he just saying, like, then I went, I did the thing, said the words, and now I'm here, or whatever.
Yeah.
And
the big, he says, back then I could have been king, but
I could have been king,
but I, it could be king here too, or whatever.
The
hail to the king baby line at the end.
Yeah. A Deadite attacks in the store. There's this weird, like, 2 minute, just quick fight of him jumping up, shooting around and missing a whole bunch with a gun. Reloading, jumping onto a cart, and just like firing extremely fast while floating down the aisle, essentially.
And part of the setup is someone asked him, like, you said the words this time, right? Though they'd like redo the him saying, having just had said the magic words bit, and he redoes the, well, maybe I didn't say every little syllable, but I said them.
And he kills the Deadite and says, hail to the king, baby, and then kisses his, like, co-worker, the female co-worker that he was talking
to. Yeah, the girl he was telling the story.
Yeah. The woman. And that's how that ends. Happy ending. Everything worked out. Wrapped back around. All good. Now.
Sort of happy ending. The evil is still unleashed upon the world, but whatever.
Yeah, it's happy
not
ending.
A big deal.
Have you seen capitalism? We still have evil in the world.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's just a different kind of evil. Frankly, the Deadites would be better in some ways.
I mean, if you're taking the Deadites in this movie, then sure. 100%.
The Deadites in this movie, honestly, like, I kind of want to be friends with some of them. They're kind of great. Okay, the original ending. And the one that you can, like, only find on director's cuts or original cuts or whatever you want to call them. He's told to swallow 6 drops of the potion, and he... It's so dumb how he fucks this up. He's like, he goes into a cave, kind of blows up the entrance so that he doesn't get bothered in his giant slumber that he's doing. Mm-hmm. He goes like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then gets distracted by something, and then goes 5, 6. So he takes an extra drop and wakes up in a like apocalyptic future where nothing exists anymore except rubble of like his civilization. Yeah. Screaming that he overslept. Which,
I slept too long.
I get that, man. Like every time I would wake up for school, just like, oh no.
I slept too long.
It's very such good. A bummer ending. It's such a bummer ending. It was such a bummer ending that Universal Pictures made him change it to the one that we talked about before.
Yeah.
How do you feel about when studios or publishers tell somebody making a movie how they should end something? Because this isn't a new thing. A lot of film like directors and stuff like that, especially indies, have a lot of times had their thing changed to be something maybe that they didn't envision at first.
It depends if they're right or not. It depends if the movie would be better if it had a different ending, is honestly okay. My stance.
I think like a lot of them come give, from the... Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the feedback that creators get a lot of the time is coming from a bad place.
It's coming from, we need to either market this better, we need to have a sequel, or we need to have a toy line.
Yeah, or, you know, focus testing. And focus testing can be incorrect and very misleading. But, you know, maybe an ending would be better if it were different sometimes. So I'm not, like, opposed to that idea that, like, feedback could be correct. But, you know, I don't know who... the creator still should probably have the final say, but they should take feedback sometimes, I guess.
Okay,
I don't know.
Sure. I'm just, like, trying to think of some other movies. One that came to mind immediately is... You've seen Clerks, right? Kevin Smith's movie?
Yes.
Do you know how that movie originally ended?
I don't remember.
Okay. Well, I mean, I should just say it anyways, because people listening might not. So the way it ends is the two main characters kind of have a big fight or whatever, and then there's a Jay and Silent Bob come in, they have a discussion, helps out with like the main character Dante kind of realizing something about his life or whatever with his relationship. They lock up, or Randall locks up, comes in and says like you're closed or whatever, throws him the thing, and it just cuts to credits with like a kind of preppy song playing or like a punky song or something. Mm-hmm. The original ending is all that happens and like they're closing up or whatever, and then as Dante's closing up, a customer comes in, there's like the ring of the bell or whatever that a customer came in, and he said, oh sorry man, we're closed. You see a gun, he shoots him, takes the money from the cash register and runs out, and then it cuts to black where he like killed the main character. And the criticism was, you can't have kind of like a lighthearted, conversational like type thing make us love a character just to kill him in cold blood at the end. And I kind of don't agree. You totally can do that. It's just a completely different thing you're making, though, at that point. Like, apparently he must have agreed in some way, or maybe he was too new or afraid to say anything about it because they changed it and it turned into arguably one of the only things I care about from that dude anymore at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but like, that was another one that was just, that ending was extremely different. The Butterfly Effect, I don't know if you remember that movie with Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah, I remember of it, but I never watched the movie.
Okay, do you mind if I just quickly say, like...
I do not mind.
Okay. No. So the whole idea of the movie is he can, like, activate his butterfly powers. No. he goes like in time or whatever into like, I don't know, has memories of like specific situations and then can change like what he does in them. And then the outcome's different in the future. The original ending, actually, hold on. I can't remember. There's two endings. I don't actually remember which one's the original one. One of them is, he like breaks away from this like girl that he loved or whatever. And then like they pass each other by on the streets when they're adults. And originally I think she dies or something terrible happens to her. She's like a drug addict or something. Right. And like by him not being part of her life, like she's alive and happy now. And they kind of walk past each other. And it's like one of those bittersweet moments of like, she's fine or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And one of the other endings is oh my God, it's so stupid. I don't even know if I can get it out. He goes back to him being in his mother's womb and kills himself using his umbilical cord so that he never existed. Or something like that. It's so fucking stupid. And it's one of those situations that I'm just like, yeah, I don't know. That seems fucking weird. You shouldn't probably have had an ending where a baby kills itself as it's being born.
Yeah.
It's so fucking stupid. So that's one of the ones that I'm just like, you know what? Good for you for speaking up and saying, like, you can't do this. This is weird in a bad way. Yeah. But this is kind of the first movie, I think, in my life that growing up, I found out that you can just have completely different endings and like have a completely different experience with. So I guess that's a milestone for me that this movie gave. I don't have much more to say about this thing. I think it's totally fine. I don't understand personally why it's as revered as it is. But it's fun. Like, I had a fun time rewatching it. Uh-huh. I don't think I need to again for a while, though.
Sure. Yeah, I basically agree with that. I think my take on the ending thing is just like, the ending to this movie doesn't matter. Like, either of those endings is fine.
Right.
Like, it's kind of not a big deal. Because it's such a silly thing. It just matters that, like, yeah, Ash is going to, like, walk into more nonsense. Like, that's just what his life is going to be. And
right. Yeah, exactly. But even then, like, they would have just made him walk into more stuff. Like, they obviously don't care about the continuity that much.
Totally.
They made Evil Dead like, 1 twice.
Like, I mean, you can easily make a movie where Ash is in a post-apocalyptic world where there are people fighting the Deadites. Like, that's very easy to conceive.
Sure. Yep. Or he wakes up early in another... Like, yeah, you could do whatever.
Continuity, you can do whatever.
Whatever. Yeah. Ted Raimi was harder to spot in this one for me. He's in there as a bunch of random things, but... Mm-hmm.
He's like, you've got my steel!
Oh, was that him?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's like the second person to sidle up, to team up with Ash, to like, or after Ash's speech, to say yeah.
Okay. I looked it up. He is Cowardly Warrior, Second Supportive Villager.
Yes.
Anthony. Supportive Villager. Anthony, the S-Mark clerk, and Skeleton Voices. Which, that makes sense. That makes sense. I think this movie did some big numbers, right? Okay, I got $21.5 million. Budget was $11 million, so it almost doubled its budget, which is pretty good. And I'm just seeing if there's anything. Oh, apparently Danny Elfman wrote the song that plays during the like fight, the March of the Dead theme.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know that. That's kind of cool. Yeah, I don't know. This is kind of the one people cite as the one they like. This is definitely the one with the most memorable like cover artwork out of all of them, I think.
It's particularly the Japanese poster.
The Japanese poster is absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. Also, there's nothing about this that makes you think it's an Evil Dead movie, which is why we've talked about this before, how growing up, we kind of didn't know when we were watching that. It's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
It's like part of this thing or whatever.
It's a medieval fantasy comedy.
Yeah. Does it even say anything about Evil Dead on it? Because it says from the director of Darkman, Army of Darkness, it has nothing about the Evil Dead on it, which is weird.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
It says Bruce Campbell versus the Army of Darkness at the beginning on the title card.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that kind of started. There's a bunch of like versus. I can't remember if it's like Ash versus. There's an army of. Yeah, sorry, I'm looking it up here. In the comics, there's a lot of versus stuff specifically too.
Yes, like, that's how they frame a lot of that stuff.
They have like Darkman versus Army of Darkness, Army of Darkness versus Reanimator. I don't know. It's weird. Marvel Zombies versus the Army of Darkness sounds like something I should read. That sounds like something I should read.
Very silly that that exists.
Yeah. We should quickly talk about our hierarchy now. Now that we've seen the main three.
Sure.
Where do we rank them with fresh eyes? Where's your, what is your third place? Your lowest of the
Army three? Of Darkness. Army
yeah,
of Darkness.
I agree. Easily. This the easiest choice ever. Yeah. What's your number two?
My number two is still The Evil Dead.
Okay. This is where we're inverse then. I still like The Evil Dead more, and I could honestly, I understand liking Evil Dead 2 as the number one choice. Depending how I feel, I think that's even interchangeable, honestly. It's just the Evil Dead has more of a like important base role in my memory and my nostalgia.
It was the third of these movies I saw. That's also, you know, part of it.
Sure.
I saw Evil Dead 2 like all the way through kind of first. So that one's kind of more cemented in my head, and I just appreciate it for its high points and I overlook its low points,
of which there's a few just in general.
Yeah. And those low points are like what keep it from being like my favorite horror movie. It's like, yeah, it's not my favorite a horror movie, like period or whatever. It's no Return of the Living Dead for me, but
yeah. Yeah, no, that's understandable.
But it's very good. I will always love the scene with everything laughing. That's just...
Yeah, everything laughing. And Dead by Dawn is like the thing that sticks in my memory for that movie specifically. Sure. Yeah, okay. Do you have anything to end off on with this movie? Any final thoughts?
No, I think that's it.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, well, that's it for the main stuff. Now we get into some weird, juicy side shit when we come back. So we're going to be watching and talking next time on Evil Dead the Musical. And then after that, we're going to be talking about Evil Dead the remake in 2013, right?
Hell yeah.
And it's going to be... interesting. It's kind of interesting because I think Evil Dead 2013 actually has nothing to do specifically with Sam Raimi, but I mean, we'd be remiss to not talk about it.
Yeah, except he's producing it, but yeah.
Yeah. Kind of broke our own rule, but whatever. It's important enough because it's based on the thing that he did.
I mean, Sam Raimi didn't, you know, write the comic books either.
Yeah, exactly.
Or whatever, or direct the musical.
Right, exactly. But, so yeah, I guess those are the main things. Now we're going to be doing some of the adjacent stuff before jumping back into a few more Raimi stuff. So, yeah, this has been a fun ride so far, though. It's been educational to relive these and see the things that we've missed. up until this point, for better or worse, I suppose. Oh, I guess, like, out of everything we've talked about, you do not have to see It's Murder Within the Woods or Crime Wave, but if you wanted to watch one, you should watch Within the Woods.
100%? Yeah. God.
Yeah. But yeah, next time, Evil Dead, the musical, so stay tuned for that. Peace.